Greetings and welcome to another episode of Trinity Radio. I am Dr. Jonathan Pritchett, and along with me is Dr. Braxton Hunter.
Did you forget my name?
Well, I didn't. I remembered that
you... It's the beard, isn't it? I've changed the beard. You don't know who I am anymore.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, it's a good manly beard, though. It looks fine on you. And anyway, welcome to another edition of this podcast, videocast thing with all new camera angles and new mic placement so that I don't get accused of not speaking into the mic. And where Braxton Hunter gets to cover up his belly and mine is sticking out for everyone to see.
Except there's one problem. This is going to be a long intro. I didn't turn the lights on.
Oh, you didn't. So we're going to scrap this and start all over.
Oh, I thought that'd be funny.
Oh, okay. Well, he thinks that you'll laugh at this, so we'll just keep going.
Yeah, you can't give up on things so easily. Like, we hope you haven't given up on this podcast.
All right, today we are going to talk about recasting reality. It's something that you find in just about every sphere of your life, whether it is on your television, whether it's in your comic books, whether it has to do with your Bible. What else is being recast?
I didn't hear the things you already listed, but television,
I wasn't
Bible,
paying attention.
Commentary.
Yeah, I said all of that.
You said those
things? Yeah. This would go a lot better if we listened to one another.
Well, I was readjusting my mic. See, this is the thing. We are so busy producing quality theological content at Trinity College of the Bible and Theological Seminary.
That this particular episode has been a total train wreck.
No, this is going to be the best. This is going to be the best episode. I feel it. I can feel it. But we are doing so many other things that we have to do show prep during the show.
That's true.
That's what's going on. Anyway, yes, we're talking about recasting reality. We have just in a conversation recently, Dr. Pritchett and I discovered that whether it be, I'll do it again, network television, mm-hmm. even reality shows, quote unquote reality show, I'm doing air quotes for those of you listening without video, or the Bible itself, or comic books. We are in the midst of, some people say that postmodernism is dead. But this re-evaluation, reinterpretation, whatever you think it means, that's what it means. I think it's alive and well, pal.
With watching people on contest television shows repeat the mantra about your truth and my truth and personal truth.
I hate it. What I hate the most is when somebody that I know says that. Yeah. Like somebody that I know who knows, and I know they know me. And they know you, and they should know better than to use that kind of talk.
Well, I mean, yes, it is my truth that I do, in fact, like sugar snap peas. That is something that is true about me.
It's not your truth.
Truth doesn't belong to you. That's what I'm saying. That is something true about me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't belong only to me because that statement is true even for you.
Truth that you only like chocolate ice cream. Is that what you said?
No. What I'm saying is...
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Is that what you said, chocolate ice cream?
No, I said sugar snap peas.
Okay. Man, I'm just not paying you any attention today.
That's fine.
Forgive me.
Most people don't.
Sugar snap peas?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, have you ever had any sort of stir fry?
Yes.
Okay, you know they're green.
They kind of snap when you bite them.
Yeah, and then they got three peas on the inside of the
They like
shell.
Steam them instead of cook them. And you bite them and they kind of crack.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Carry on.
Okay, so it's true about me that I like these vegetables. And it also has to be true for him as well that I like these because it is in fact true. That is not to say that it is my truth that I like.
Right. It's also my truth.
Yeah.
Because it's the truth.
Right. And so there, ultimately, if it's true, that which corresponds to reality, then it is the truth, and it's not something that's just true for your personal truth. So that kind of language does annoy me, because that's like 2 + 2 = 4 is your truth. It's just not my truth. You know, anyone, because that's what they're saying. They're saying something, and that's an extreme example, but they're saying something as dumb as that. You know, when they make anything your truth, but not anyone else's truth. So,
Yeah, so
it's a subtle distinction.
What's provocative, or I don't know how to say it, interesting about this topic today is we're not just talking about the old moral relativism thing. We're talking about this. We're talking about people deciding for themselves what is true and acting like it's their truth. Yeah. And that's what's and actually, it's more than that.
But they're
trying to force their truth
right
onto you. And they're trying to say, you're right, pal. There is just the truth, and I'm going to provide it.
Right. And they're in the whole scheme of this is they're trying to give a false narrative about reality in a way that reality isn't, but they want to insist that what they think it should be, it is, but it's not.
So the show topic for today evolved from, originally Dr. Pritchett came up with the idea that what we should talk about today is a new book by Rob Bell. You'll remember Rob Bell from the Rob Bell Hell fiasco, where he tried to say, you know, as I think back on it now, knowing a little bit more about these views, I think it was some kind of like a evangelical universalism,
probably,
which basically that there is a hell. It's just, you know, in the end, it'll be empty, maybe,
right,
or probably, because love wins. That was the name of his book, was Love Wins. But then now he's got a book. What is it? What is the Bible, or what's
right
the Bible about?
And he's had some books in between there that nobody cared about. And this
he
one,
had other books.
Yeah,
I'm proud. I didn't know.
Right. Well, yeah, I knew.
I'm kind of tipping my hand to my position on Rob Bell here.
Yeah, you don't care about what he says or does, which is kind of the result of this latest book that he has come up with. That's their publishers are talking about how more controversial it is than anyone else on the internet, literally, because nobody's paying it any attention.
Okay, so let me tell you. I was listening to his podcast today,
yeah,
when I was driving around, because I knew you wanted to talk about this.
Sort of.
And so I listened to his podcast. So I'm going to get it from the horse's mouth. Mm-hmm. And so I listened to him talk, and what he was droning on about was mostly how everybody loves his book. That's what he wanted to talk about. He's talking about how when he goes on shows, they have seven questions that basically are always the same when you release a book. And he was talking about how this is how you know you're part of the emergent church crowd, frankly, is when he said, what he said was, the people that other Christian writers, like, these are the secular journalists who pick them apart and give them a real hard time because they've written something, you know, that's you know, I think he would think archaic or whatever. He said they all loved my book, and they the kind of people, he said, who would never want to read the Bible and saw no value in reading the Bible, now they were like renewed in their interest, like, ooh, I want to read the Bible and think about the way you described it when I read it.
Yeah,
that, what does that tell you? Like, you know, like, on the one hand, I like the idea of casting biblical truth, like the actual truth, in a way that people see the value in it,
right,
and is attractive and all of that sort of thing, because it is intrinsically valuable and attractive. But I don't like the idea of changing it to be what they already think life should be anyway, with none of the hard stuff, and then
right
handing it over to them, which, from the review, I haven't read the book, but from what everybody that I trust has said, this is the worst kind of thing to do, what we're doing, which is to critique a book we haven't read.
No, it isn't.
But
I'll defend that, too, for all of our people who need that sort of thing defended. I'm your guy on this.
What are you defending?
The fact that you could trash something or comment about something without ever having read it or watched it or whatever, it's perfectly fine to do that.
What would you say about the Bible?
Huh?
Can they trash the Bible without having read it?
Sure.
Well, I mean, I know they can. Should they?
Sure.
They should trash the Bible without having read it.
Yeah.
Speak.
Okay.
Explain yourself.
So here's the thing. People who don't like the Bible are going to trash it without having read it, and they don't need to read the Bible to know with a high degree of certainty that it's not going to condone homosexual behavior, and if they like it, they don't need to read it first before they decide they don't like it.
So you're saying, like, say somebody has this understanding from just living in the world today, the Bible says homosexuality is
or homosexual sinful, behavior or whatever,
is bad,
yeah,
and it wouldn't be effective for me to say, well, you got to understand the context, because they're going to read it, get the context, and be like, yeah, that's what I thought it said.
Right.
So
basically, all
you're saying is, we've done a good enough job explaining what the Bible says in the church in general that they know already.
And reviewers and movie film critics and people who write endless blogs about pop culture do a good job giving you the gist of what stuff says, that if you already have a predisposition to not agree with it, you don't need to bother reading it to say, yeah, I'm going to disagree with that. I understand this flies in the face of all kinds of conventional thinking that you should just keep your mouth shut up until you've read the entire book. No. Where do these rules come from? If something is represented fairly enough and you don't like it, what it's representing, then you don't need to read it. Here's what I can say.
I rarely disagree with you, but I think I disagree with you.
No, here's what I can say.
No, I do.
Rob Bell has written another book that I will never read, okay? I didn't read Love Wins, don't care to.
My case is not that you should read Rob Bell's books. My case is that it might be less than responsible for us to comment with too much depth on what he's saying without knowing what he's saying.
Well, okay.
Now, I read Velvet Elvis, so I have some insight into his thinking. So that much is true.
Yeah, no, I don't, because if I read a blurb and he's trying to tell me what this book is about, then I already know all I need to know. I already know he wants to emphasize, because he's still in this book, as far as I can tell, and I listened to his Facebook Live stuff where he went on and on with some lady from HarperCollins talking about the book. And I'm like, okay, this is, number one, it's nothing new. Number two, all he is doing is saying, yeah, we should look at the fact that this was a book written by humans, and that's true, while ignoring or downplaying the divine inspiration of it. He's saying we need to look at it in its ancient context. He says we need to look at it, what these stories meant, not ask why did God inspire this to be in the Bible, but why did the human authors think that these particular set of stories was meant to be in there, and so on and so forth.
But you did get, you heard what he had to say about his hermeneutic.
Yeah.
If you call it that. You heard what he had to say about what the whole point was and how he arrived at his conclusions.
Right, but then he goes beyond what even that allows for. If he's, what he wants to say is, he says, okay, so we don't have to understand these the way the traditional church has understood them because of this. So he thought it was some big thing that, you know, anyone who has taken a world lit class at a gen ed technical trade school like I did when I started my academic career, we read the Epic of Gilgamesh. We knew there was a flood story. And he's like, did you know there was lots of ancient flood stories? And so the only point about the flood story was a new idea that the god of this particular people saved eight people and didn't wipe out the human race. And that's a new idea that he said he would never do that again, whereas the gods intended to wipe out the human slave. Number one, what that doesn't say is that the biblical account is therefore not a real account. That doesn't follow from it. What also doesn't follow from it is that that was a new idea because a lot of people had survived. There were survivors in each of these ancient tales. That's how the human race was still around. So at the end of the day, he's saying something that we never, he's not saying anything we've never heard before. All he's saying is, and therefore, these things can follow from this, which don't follow.
Okay, well, let me tell
he
you.
He piles what, up the non sequiturs. Therefore,
let me
you
tell
don't
you what I do like about Rob, because I did, from reading it, I got enough quotes from him, from reading articles about this book. I got enough quotes from him that there's at least one thing I like. And it's just a cliche kind of way of saying it, and he's not the first to say it, but it's a theme throughout his book, is that you should read the Bible, how does he say it?
Literarily.
Literarily instead of literally.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Right, and hermeneutics books from a century ago were
they made that point.
Right.
It's you should like take is, for the listener. He's trying to emphasize that you should take into context or take into account the type of literature it is before you draw your conclusion.
And it's ancient context.
Yeah.
And it's literary genre. And all of these things that you'll find in any basic hermeneutics book.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, But what my problem is he introduces this stuff as if nobody had ever thought about it, you know, and then goes on to make a bunch of conclusions that don't follow from the premises he sets up.
But the thing is, he's such a caricature, because as I listened to his podcast today, which I haven't heard him speak in years. And I was listening to him, and he is so, like, I would think that the hipster culture or whoever it is, like the artsy Gen Xers and whatever that listen to him,
yeah,
I would think they could see through it. Like all the thing, like 100% of the things that your grandma thinks your generation is like, he is exactly that. Like he wouldn't quit droning on about how everywhere he went to speak on this book tour or whatever, or promoting this book, it didn't look like a religious place. It didn't look like a church. It looked more like a, you know, like a club or a theater or whatever. And his way, and his the way he knew he had a good book was that the world approved of it. And all these kind of things, they're like,
yeah,
they're like, dude, you're such a caricature of yourself. You know what I mean?
And it's yeah, and it's not even all that compelling of a story. You know, it's like the people who are still trying to say, we're a church for folks who don't like church. I roll my eyes and say, number one, that sounds like a 90s church slogan. But number two, it's like, I want to go to a church that's for people who like church. So your church yeah. is... Your church is not for me, and shouldn't be for any right-thinking person who was not even a Christian who was interested in just seeing what a church is like.
But
well,
so
this is a church for people who don't like church. I want to go to the church. If I want to see what church is like, I want to go to a church for people who like it.
But so does, you know? Rob Bell actually believe... I mean, like... From what I can gather, he actually believes in God.
Yeah.
Does he? And he believes in the truth of Christianity, right? Kind
yeah,
of.
I think, like, this is a more liberalized version of Bardian theology. Is really what it boils down
okay,
to.
Okay. Well.
So it's moved away from neo-orthodoxy to just liberalism, because it's downplaying any sort of meaningful divinity and divine inspiration.
Y'all. Well, yeah, but like that was the whole thing in Velvet Elvis. For those of you who don't know, that was like his first big hit, I think. And he was saying there, like that. He said, this is the analogy I remember, I'll never forget. He said it was original, like the way that Orthodox Christianity has it, it's like a table, and doctrinal beliefs like the virgin birth, the bodily resurrection, these kind of things, the Trinity, they're like tables on, they're like legs on the table. And so if you take one of those legs out, the thing falls over, right? What, like we're talking about like the Orthodox fundamentals of the faith type thing.
Right.
If you take one out, it's not Christianity anymore. It falls over. He said, right. That's not what we're doing here. What we're doing is, it's like a trampoline. It's like the springs that hold together a trampoline. You can take one of those away and you still got a working trampoline. In fact, take five or six of them out. Rearrange them. Put them in different order. You still got a trampoline. It's not so much important what the doctrinal belief is as it is the genuineness of the heart. Now, the problem with that sort of thinking, like, say, the bodily resurrection. Don't need that. Still believe in the virgin birth, or keep the bodily resurrection, get rid of the virgin birth, or get rid of the Trinity, or whatever it is. The problem with this is, first of all, I don't think this person, and this is what makes me wonder, this is what makes me quite sure he's a wolf in sheep's clothing, is because, and I know I don't usually make those strong statements about people who at least seem like they're trying to represent Christianity to some degree. I'm not like a polemicist like some people are that are so popular right now, like that's the new cool thing or whatever.
Right.
But you know,
it's not cool.
But when it's right, it's right. We got a guy here who, if you're challenging, if you're saying things like that, these doctrinal fundamentals aren't as important, that you can take them away and all that. First of all, I don't think you're serious about, you're messing with important stuff here that has to do with eternity. It's akin to me going to this construction site where they're building a new hotel down here, and go to this construction site and go up to and start messing with the wiring in the crane that is currently holding something that can kill people.
Right.
And I'm just monkeying around. I'm like, hey, it's a new day. Quit being such a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah, I installed a car stereo back in my teens. I can do this.
Well, but I could mess around with something that could cause a catastrophe.
Right.
No, you're dealing with very important stuff that has to do with people's souls. And it's like with I don't know how you are, but like with me, like somebody was asking me something, I think. It is a bit controversial, my answer on this particular thing. But I said, you know, but if I'm wrong, I recognize this could be damning. So I always put out the caveat, I could be wrong about this. You know?
Right.
And this guy, he's just monkeying with the machinery, man.
Yeah. But Rob, here's my biggest problem with all this, because I think I would probably, if I read the book, which I'm not going to, and I'm going to still talk about a book that I'll never read.
We got it. I got your views on
it. I can look at a movie trailer and say, that clip is bad acting. That clip is bad acting. Those are bad special effects. Don't need to see that movie. I get a gist of what it's about, and it still stinks. It's fine. That's what trailers are for.
You've made that case for probably 10 whole minutes of this podcast.
So
I'm going to edit some of that out.
No. It's gold. It's pure gold. So here's my biggest problem, though it was a bigger problem with the Love Wins thing. Rob Bell writes a book with some ideas in it that were not new. The evangelical people throw a big fit. The gatekeepers of evangelicalism throw a fit. And then now it's like, you can't even talk about it. Like, your hell class where you present fair views on annihilationism and eternal torment and evangelical universalism, where you just present the views, you tell people that you're a traditional on that view, but you present them fairly. Well, some people would throw a fit that you just presented information like that. And see,
I was actually shocked at how little of that there was in that. Like, there wasn't any.
Nobody was throwing a fit. Yeah.
Yeah. But well, that just shows you the caliber of a Trinity student.
Right, because we allow for thought here. But it goes back to this idea that, I mean, we can't just consider ideas. Rob Bell has to do something that's nothing new yet again. His publishers have to drum up that this is controversial, even though barely anyone but us is talking about it, which lets you know how far you've sunk, Rob Bell.
People have made up their opinions about
him. But it was more so with The Love Wins. But even, I wish this book would have came first, because this book was actually would have been more important around that time, because it would have illustrated the point that when something like this happens, you have to draw lines in the sand and jump a spectrum and then put the two positions as far away as possible.
So what you're saying is we should invite people like him to say their thing, to like make your case, and don't shoot him in the head for making his case. Let's just let him make his case, and then let's talk about if it's stupid, but how stupid it is.
Yeah, but at the same time, it would be nice if people like him wouldn't go out and say, look how edgy and controversial this is, when it's not. So I'm all for basic hermeneutic principles that he hasn't revolutionized. It's what he thinks follows from this. As if nobody, even in the 70s when they wrote the Chicago Statement, they were talking about literary genres.
But here's what the one of the articles said. I think it was a Gospel Coalition article that said this. That you can, like, it's clear reading the book that what has happened is he has formed his own opinions about God and the nature of reality and the Christian faith and how things should be done.
Right.
And then those were his, it's like the Jesus Seminar, they had their guiding principles that did away with the possibility of the supernatural, did away with anything politically incorrect. And then they went to the Bible, and those, you parse out anything that is politically incorrect or whatever. And they said that's what he does. He took his ideas, very 21st century hipster ideas, and looked at the Bible through that lens. And whenever there was a controversial thing, like a war or whatever, we're going to reinterpret it with this grid in mind.
And now Greg Boyd, who's doing this a little bit more sane, who I probably will eventually read his book, because he spends 500 pages laying down a hermeneutical method and a case for it, which I will find interesting. He wrote, you know, let's try to re-understand these ancient texts. He deals primarily with just the violent texts of the Old Testament and wants to, you know, let's look at these through the lens of Jesus. And if God's really like Jesus and these texts can't really mean what they mean on the surface and all that. And he goes through church father hermeneutics and all this other stuff. So that will be actually at least an academically rigorous and probably interesting thing.
Is what Rob Bell's doing, is it new? Yes and no, if you ask me. What he's doing in general, which is what he's saying about the passages, is not new. It's hard to do that because everybody's done that, you know. But what is new is what can always be new. Because here's the hermeneutic that will never die with people like this. And 100 years from now, it'll still be going on. And whatever fatty, you know, popular, trendy guy is going then, or gal, or transgendered person, or whatever's going at that time, All they have to do is reinterpret the Bible holistically according to their guiding principles right. that have to do with their identity and the things that are values in the culture in America right then.
And you not only find that with the Bible, but as you've mentioned, we were going to talk about comic books. So let's talk about comic books, and recasting reality in comic books.
So I was going to segue into this, and really the first place I heard about this was on another podcast, but then I went and looked up the article. It's shocking. This is from Variety, but first of all, are you a DC man or a Marvel man?
I've never... It's like, what
don't be that way. Be black or white. Be either on the Geisler end of this thing or the Peter Enns end of this thing.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Probably DC.
Okay, good man. I'm a DC guy too.
Even though they don't have as good a film.
They've been dropping the ball on that regard. Because I used to be, as a kid growing up, I was a loyal DC reader, mainly Batman and Robin and Nightwing. But I loved DC. I abhorred Marvel because that's what you do at that stage of your life is you pick a camp. And you're like either one of the goths or the geeks or the whatever.
Right.
And with comic books too, it's like I'm this, I'm not that. And so I was DC. And I still think I preferred it, but I have to say
there's better superheroes.
So. Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's not a more quintessential superhero
than Superman.
And I'm not even a big Superman fan, but who is it? One of our theology friends likes Superman.
Ryan Putman.
Ryan Putman. That's for you, Ryan Putman. We'll have to hashtag him or something.
Yeah.
But Batman. Batman is a far better superhero than Superman. By the way, who wins in a fight, Superman or Batman? Not according to the dumb movie that came out.
Superman.
Batman wins every time.
No.
Do you know why? Because in the comic book, Superman gave Batman a bat cave full of kryptonite just in case this ever happened.
Yes, but if he doesn't have if Superman just caught him off guard, decided to laser beam eyes him to death, it'd be over quick.
He wouldn't catch him off guard. He's Bruce Wayne, man. He has all the security video cameras all over Gotham ready at his command.
What if they're just out hanging out, you know, and
he just has Superman gets drunk and then
they have to go. I think they have to stretch reality and they have to
agree to disagree. But I'll tell you
what do they call it? Your
suspension of disbelief.
Of disbelief. In the most implausible ways they have to manufacture so that Batman comes out on top every time.
Okay, I disagree, but a much better...
Right, because you've been programmed to think that Batman's cooler than Superman, therefore Batman must win.
A much better battle, I think, would be Superman versus Yoda. Now, that's worth seeing.
Well, you can watch...
they'll make it, if we just live long enough.
Superman and Yoda, Superman will destroy... Well, I guess his lights... If Yoda doesn't have his lightsaber...
He doesn't need a lightsaber. If he has to use...
So he's
going to
get a dark side point for using his...
If Yoda gets to the point where he has to use a lightsaber on Superman, he's already lost. All right, so let's get on to this. But Marvel is seeing a decline in sales. Now, that may come as a shock because they're killing it in terms of movies and TV shows, right? But not necessarily in terms of their comic books and graphic novels. And so... Here's the article. The title of the article is Marvel Exec Backpedals After Suggesting, get this, diversity to blame for comic book sales slump. So basically what's happened is they made a point, Marvel made a point, and DC did too. I mean, it was several years ago that there was a lesbian Batwoman type character, Batgirl, that was a lesbian type thing. I don't know if that's stuck around or not.
Green Lantern became gay.
Green Lantern's gay?
Yeah.
But Marvel has made an effort to make minority characters in spots, female characters. There's like a female Thor now, and then gay characters, and maybe transgender. I don't know how far this goes, but the exec said that basically this is what he said was to blame because you can quantify these things, right?
Right.
All you got to do is look what's selling and what's not selling, and what has stopped selling since you did this. Now, let me just go ahead and say, because I don't want to lump minorities and then people that are transgender, I don't want to lump all that together. Right. I think it's great to have minority characters.
Yes.
I think, but here's what I think is great. I think good storytelling is great. I think representing the nature of reality well with a twist for your superhero to make, because isn't that the best thing? Isn't that why Batman was such a great, I mean, I'm giving my opinion here, but why say The Dark Knight Rises or something, that was incredible, whereas some of these other ones are just not, is because there everything about it was real. It was true to life, except we've tweaked it a little bit. You got a superhero who has these superpowers. It's why I think that the first film in a superhero franchise is always the best. Like the first Spider-Man was the best of the Spider-Man. First Iron Man was the best. You want to know why? Because everything in the world is normal, except this guy suddenly can do whatever he can do. Climb up a wall, jump a football field or whatever. And those are fascinating because it makes you instantly think, what if I could do that? What would that be like? And I wish I could do that, you know?
Yeah.
But once you get to the point where it's like the third Captain America film, where it's not even a Captain America film anymore, and every imaginable superhero, good or bad, is all battling against each other, mostly the good guys, battling against each other. Isn't that Captain America?
Yeah, the Civil War.
It's like, what the heck, man? This is no longer fun.
Yeah.
It's too much is going on. And so the problem is when you start, but what is happening is, the filmmakers are trying to, or the comic book writers and stuff, are trying to, they're like, okay, the way the world wants it now, which means a small percentage of power brokers in Hollywood want it now, is for gay people to be as common as straight people.
Yes.
You're going to run into just as many gay people as you are straight people. You're going to run into just as many transgender people as you are straight people. You're going to run into, and all these people, they can do everything that everybody else can do, and everything is equal. And so in order to do that, we got to take the comic book world and we got to make sure that you got a gay guy in there, a transgender person in there, every minority represented, we got to have our token everything.
It's tokenism, it's imposed diversity, and it's like the Southern Baptist Convention's history on slavery, and like Southern Baptist Theological Seminary was started by a bunch of racist slave owners, right? You can't undo that history. So Fast and Furious franchise decides that they're going to create something new that reflect, and I like the franchise, by the way.
Never seen it.
Yeah, it's all right. But see, they invented this from scratch to have reflection of diverse cast members.
Oh, really?
Right, yeah. I mean,
I thought it was just to have crazy car scenes.
Well, like, that's that too, but point. It was intentionally cast, even from the very first episode, to be diverse, and it just only became more and more diverse.
Has that worked?
And it worked, but here's why there's no backlash for it. If you're a comic book fan, and I know people are going to say, well, you're white, you can't speak for other people. I've read other people, and I don't think that, like, Latino comic book fans all of a sudden want to see Superman become Latino.
Right. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
By the way,
what they want to see is create an awesome Latino superhero, but don't try to rewrite history. You know, like the Southern Baptist Convention, you can't rewrite your history, right? And Marvel, you shouldn't make Thor a woman just because you feel like it. Now, I don't think comic book fans of any sexual orientation really like that kind of thing, which is why nobody's happy and why those things decline. You can create new things, you know, from scratch that are intended to be that.
Yeah, well,
you don't have Black Panther be a white guy when you start Black Panther. On purpose, like Luke Cage was intentionally what he was.
Yeah, but here's what'll fix it.
And people like that.
Here's what'll make the point I'm trying to make. I don't know if this matches what you're trying to say, but it matches what I'm trying to say. And it's this, which is, it's like, that person isn't good enough anymore, or that character isn't good enough anymore because he's not black enough, or he's not gay enough, or he's not white enough, or he's not Asian enough, or whatever it is.
Right.
It's like Bill Nye the Science Guy. Right, we don't like him. Right,
no,
don't like him. He's not even like
a
what
scientist.
Is it? Yeah, he's not really a scientist.
But that's not the problem.
No. Hold on.
He's bad at science.
Okay,
even to popularize.
Yes, I know.
Him.
But here's what you may not know.
Right.
That I just discovered today.
Okay.
Is that Bill Nye was asked to be a part of the March for Science, which I have footage when they did it right in front of this building that's going to be in an upcoming video. But he was going to be, they asked him not to be in it. You want to know why?
Why?
He's a middle-aged white guy. No. That's the reason. Now here's the thing. I don't want him speaking at the March for Science because I think he doesn't know what he's talking about.
But that's not why you don't.
But that's the worst of all reasons not to have him speak, is it's like, you're not white enough. You're not diverse enough. You're too white and middle-aged and male, you know? But this is the thing. Like, let's just say we don't already have our feelings we have about Bill Nye. The fact is, how does his whiteness or how does his middle-agedness affect his good science, his ability to do good science? I thought science was all about the facts, man.
If he had the good ability to do good science, it wouldn't interfere at all.
That's what I'm saying. All ignore that.
Right.
Like, you know.
Yeah. Now, see that I don't know.
But that's the thing. It's like, whatever it is, you're not good enough anymore because you're not diverse
enough.
Here's
the thing. I don't, at Trinity, unlike every other seminary in the United States, we are probably by now a majority minority.
Well, we're getting close.
Well, I mean,
if you count women as minorities, then we probably definitely are.
Oh, wait, yeah. Well, I mean, just our African American.
Do women count as minorities?
No, I mean, if the white male is the standard,
yeah,
then.
So we've got more women and minorities than white males.
Oh, absolutely, by far that.
Sure.
But I mean, I
think it's two-thirds.
Just African Americans alone are 44% of our seminary, and then you have I don't know, it's like another 15 to 17% Latino, and then we've got a lot of, and I don't mean just African American. I should say African, like African or African American.
African Africans,
right.
or African UK people.
Just people of African descent. Well, I guess that's everybody, but
you're talking yourself and you're chasing
yourself.
Well,
I'm just saying, we don't have the same issue that other seminaries have because we have got all kinds of folks here, which is what we celebrate at Trinity. You look at all of our pictures of graduation and like white people are the tokens, like, oh, there is a white guy there. You know, I mean,
it's not that bad.
So for us, it's never a thing, but for other people, it's a thing that you know, if they're going to the whitest seminary in the world is going to make sure that they have an Asian on their brochure or on their front page of their website. You know, and they're going to have show people, diverse people that are
and it's fake,
disproportionate to the actual numbers if you look at their ATS reports of enrollment. But see, the thing is they want people to buy an impression that reality is a certain way that it's not. That you know, you look at all the gay characters on TV, and yet I walk around Evansville and I don't encounter that many obvious flamboyant gay people. If they are in the supermarket with me, they don't act like the people on TV do. That they're not all Will from Will and Grace, who you wouldn't know was gay unless you followed the show, which they're bringing back Will and Grace, by the way.
They're bringing back Will and Grace.
But the other guy on Will and Grace, right? The other gay guy on Will and Grace is how most gays are portrayed on television, which is actually upsets a lot of gay people that they're all portrayed like that guy.
Yeah.
You know, the more it's gotten better, but they still portray him like that. But reality is not like that. Like, you talk about your one gay friend, not because you don't want to be friends with gays, but you just don't have a lot of gay friends.
I do not have a lot of gay friends.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not the guy who's going to say, well, some of my closest friends are black. I've got like two. Two is not some. But most of my closest friends are actually white. And I have some African-American friends and some Asian friends that I don't see that much. Like,
Well, you don't count anymore.
But no, I realize that my entire relevance has gone through the basement because I turned 40, and that alone is enough.
Yeah, it's worse. Now you're a middle-aged white man.
I'm a middle-aged irrelevant, but that's fine. But I'm just saying, the two African-American guys that I know rather well, I'm like one of the few white people they know at that same level because most of the people they hang out with are not white people. They hang out with mostly African American. So I mean, but this idea that every circle is going to have this, you know, CW young adult television programming cast, that's not your friends.
Right.
That's not what most people's friends look like, even at younger ages, especially in the South or the Midwest.
Now, don't get me wrong.
Or up north, where there's just not a lot of.
I'm almost afraid people are going to think that we're like. I'm glad you pointed out the diversity in our student body, because we. It's not like I'm saying it's bad to have diversity, especially racial diversity,
right?
And gender, you know, men and women, but
because it's awesome that we do. And
what I'm trying to say is just the forced. You're not enough this, and so you don't count as much. But this brings it on. I wanted to talk about this because everybody watched this. I've got a blog article that's a few weeks old now by the time you see this. But on Survivor, so I'm a huge Survivor fan. And my wife and I, what we do is we wait till the season's almost done, and then we binge watch every episode, and we love it. Because if I watch them week to week, I forget what happened the week before. I don't know if you're that way with a show. But now, because of the binge watching, it's changed the wiring in my brain right. such that by the time it rolls around again, I don't remember what happened last time. Does that happen to you?
I've got to, but your memory in general is just not what it, you know.
My memory is bad? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, you don't have a very good memory.
Dang it.
You don't. My memory's not great, but I mean, I don't have that problem.
Okay. Well, I think I just prioritize things, and Survivor's down the list. But
that could be it.
But anyway, so we're watching this, and last season there was a character that came out as gay, and you know, at that point I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, they
big surprise
for another, a long time they've done that, plus right. this guy, I thought he was gay. I mean, it wasn't like he was flamboyant, but I had a hunch. Anyway, this season though, that character came back, and in a very controversial tribal council, you know, where they're about to vote somebody off the island, this other guy, this just unfortunately for him, middle-aged white guy. It would have been much better if he was, you know, a minority woman or something and did right. this. But like some kind of just regular middle-aged white guy ends up, because he's trying to make sure that that character gets voted off and not him. And so he says, what y'all don't know, you don't even know about the transgender thing. And everybody's like, what? What? And it was a shock to me because this character did not look transgender. People would get upset at me for just saying look transgender, but it is what it is. And and it became a big emotional moment because he had just outed someone as transgender who had not said anything yet. Now, okay, I was offended too, because frankly, and you'll disagree with me on this, and I know that a lot of the polemics type crowd out there, people will not like me saying this, but I didn't think that was appropriate either. It's none of your business to go on network television and deal in somebody else's life. But regardless of that, what affected me most was Jeff Prost, all the other people on the tribal council, everyone universally started affirming the nobility of this character, that they were somehow instantly a little bit above us, a little bit more to be valued.
But it was virtuous and praiseworthy
yes.
just to be transgender.
Yes, and there was one character in particular, I won't name them, but there was one character in particular, a girl, a young girl, who did the virtue signaling that you told me people do.
Yes.
But this was it. She was like, in the middle of everybody focusing on him, right, the transgender person. She's like, I just want everybody to know, I grew up in mid-America, middle America, a very conservative family and all that. And I think we can all see how I've developed through all of this, because I think that what you've done is good and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, first of all, what do you have to do with this? Right?
Right.
What's your involvement here, you know? And secondly, like, it went on through the next couple episodes. Everybody on the whole show was like advocating for the trans lifestyle. In fact, don't take my word for it. Take David Cansfield's opinion of it. He's a writer for Slate who said it exactly that way. It was the most America has never seen on network television, such open advocacy for a trans lifestyle as what they saw. And he, I guess, was in favor of it. The thing about it is, it's just that everything about it was so produced. I think even the producers were like, oh yeah, we capitalized on this and wanted to make it the centerpiece of this episode. But it's, and every, where does this weird cultural morality come from that this is noble and good and to be praised?
I don't know. See, I missed the era where overweight white men were seen, like in the 1950s, you know, if you were a doctor, like a medical doctor, not a like academic doctor and you're an overweight white guy, you could like tell people that smoking was healthy and you would have like hot women next to you.
Yeah.
You know, Perry Mason style, but nobody thinks that being a doctor, middle-aged, overweight white guy's virtuous anymore. So you got to find something else. And it's finally come around to this is the latest thing, which never mind to all the other people that got glossed over for their moment to be virtuous, you know.
And see, here's the problem. Just
pick this and say, hey, look, by the virtue of you having what in prior medical journals said was mental disorder, we're going to say that this is awesome that you're this.
But see, you're right. And see, but here's the problem. People think, and I know Christians who will be like, how dare you even have a podcast where you talk about these things? But the thing about it is, it's actually, they think they're being loving. Everyone on that show, I believe, really believed they were being loving by pouring out this affirmation. Now, what they get right is, we should love that. But the love they wanted to convey was good and should be there. What was wrong was the affirmation of something that is eternally damaging. And the thing about it is, that's actually not love. We've said this before on this show. That's the opposite of love. If you're a smoker and I'm like, you know, I love him, and so I want him to know that. So look, what a noble, you've got a disease. You're addicted. You're addicted to smoking. I know it's hard to quit, so I affirm you in not listening to society and carrying forth with your 3-pack-a-day habit. Good for you. Good for you. That's right. And everybody gets a car. You get a car. This is the thing. If that's what's going on, that's actually not loving. I hope everyone can see. That's the opposite of loving.
Right.
And this is what's happening with the transgender thing. Or Christianity's false. Yeah. If Christianity's false, it's still not loving to do what they're doing because there is no love, right? There's just wiring in your brain that makes you feel a certain way.
It is. But you know? How many people are on Survivor? Because I don't watch the show and I can still...
Oh, I don't know. They start with 20 of them or something.
Okay, so 20 and there was one transgender person out of 20.
Mm-hmm. That I know of.
Right. Even that doesn't reflect reality.
Right. Yeah.
They're not one in 20 is not.
And when you deny the truth like this, it leads toward a lack of love. It leads toward catastrophe.
Yeah. They're not, recasting reality is a bad thing. See, reality at Trinity is Revelation 5:9, Revelation 7:9, people of every tribe, tongue, and nation. You want to know what heaven's going to look like? Come to Trinity and participate at a seminary with real diversity. But not everywhere is like us. And so when you try to paper over, is what goes back to what I said in a previous podcast, that true diversity happens in Christ. That's how God has set up the world. Manufactured Christless multiculturalism attempts are destined to fail because they're contra Christ and they're falsely manufactured. Trinity has been here for 50 years. And because of Christ, and because of our Christian principles, and not only educating from a conservative evangelical perspective, but also our principle of not pricing people out of the ability to come to seminary, we have 50 years of that, of being Christian in the truest sense. And look what happened. We are a truly diverse seminary. But when you manufacture it, you try to do it outside of Christ, it always leads to problems. You now have on secular universities people advocating for segregationalism, which is why it's contrary to what what's happening in reality is not what's happening in Marvel Comics. In Marvel Comics, you're saying trying to force people together, right? In the church, where true Christianity is, like Trinity or wherever, you see down Evansville, right out here, that Center of Hope Church. Happens on its own. Very diverse. It happens on its own. When you try to force it, especially outside of Christ, it leads to disaster. And then how long has it been since Brown v. Board of Education? And we're already seeing people wanting to go back to segregationalism because people can't come together outside of Jesus.
Spoken like a true Arkansasian.
Yeah.
Didn't that happen? Didn't the first integrated school... Wasn't that
Central High School. Oh, yes. I mean, and you know, they had to call in the National Guard and all that, you know.
Well, okay. Well, let me back up and say, I want to highlight
and
something.
And all these Christians out there were screaming racial epitaphs.
Yeah.
Well, Christians,
I
want to
say
way.
Something good about something you've said in the past. Yeah. See, that got him to stop immediately.
Say something good about me.
Yeah. You said something before that I had to clarify because I knew people would take it wrong. But on one of our first podcasts together ever, we were talking about homosexuality, and you said there are going to be gay people in heaven.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, I know what you mean, maybe, but I also just hired you, and I don't know, or my dad did, and I don't know what in the world you mean. So, but it's the diversity is there are people at Trinity right now who are of broadly speaking all races, and I guarantee, and I know of people here that have same-sex attraction but have sacrificed that for the glory of God. I'm confident there are probably people who are, if they're not in our ranks right now, have been at Trinity students in the past, who may have transgendered identity desires, identity issues, but they've sacrificed that for the glory of God. And in heaven, there will be people of all races, and there will be people who had such proclivities but sacrificed them for the kingdom.
Yes.
That's the kind of integration. That's the kind of multiculturalism. Yeah. That's the kind of inclusion that you say happens naturally, and it happens when you come to Jesus, because all people with all desires and all skin tones are called to Jesus, and that's where they are. Well, we hope that you'll come and be a part of this growing body, and it is growing here at Trinity, right?
Yes.
This growing a crowd of many witnesses, this congregation.
This cloud of witnesses. There's people from every tribe, tongue, and nation. If you want true diversity, you find it in Christ, and you find it at Trinity College of the Bible. Not manufactured. We don't have to recast reality. We have 50 years of reality. It doesn't reflect what everyone
You might
is
see
saying.
A white dude in our advertising. You might see an Asian woman in our advertising. You might see a black woman. You might see some Filipino children. Who knows what you'll see in our advertising, because it's all true, man. We're not making it up.
Right, and we don't have to recast reality and shove it down people's throats that is actually denying reality, and I think harmful, because outside of Christ, when you get... Just look what happened with the Jews and the Gentiles, right? When they first all had to be at the same table. I mean, even Peter was like, I'm not going to sit with them anymore, because what will they say?
Yeah.
You know? It's... Reconciliate that, tearing down that wall, you know, that divides people is not an easy thing to do. It can only be done in Christ. But when you try to pretend no walls ever existed, and let's just paper over all past problems, let's deny reality and shove people together, it's actually really hard work. It's actually hard work even in Christ. To see true reconciliation, to really be able to bond with people with a completely different worldview than yours. Even though you're all Christian, you have a different perspective on things. You and I grew up probably broadly middle class, suburbia. I don't know what it's like to be from Ghana. And I'm not going to pretend like I know what it's like to be from Ghana. And I'm not going to, but I'm going to be smart enough in Christ to know that they may have a different perspective on the world than I do, and I don't need to imperialize them or call, with my views of how things should be, this kind of imperialism of the West. But I think that secular culture has tried to imperialistically shove people together outside of Christ, and then they sit back and scratch their heads wondering why it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work from violent neighborhoods down to decreasing sales for Marvel Comics, it'll never work independent of Christ. If you really have a vision for the scene in Revelation, it only happens in Christ. And that's one thing that I want people to be mindful of when they look at their televisions, when they look at their comics.
Plus, people have a good fake radar. Yeah. A good phony radar.
Yeah.
On this other podcast I was listening to, there's a woman co-host, and she was like, she is like a 20-something, and she liked superheroes. She liked superhero stuff. And she was like, but there's got to be a girl version. She's like, I'm a girl. But that's phony to me.
Yeah, don't pander.
It's not phony because I have a problem with the idea of a girl character. If you start a new comic book with a girl, kind of like you said with Fast and Furious, if you start a new comic book with a girl character, okay, fine, whatever. But it's that I know you did that just because of this.
Right. Or you made Thor a woman just because of this.
Yeah, it's just fake. It's not genuine. And we want things that are genuine. We want it to reflect the nature of reality, which goes back, we need to wrap up, but it goes back to a discussion we had on a long time ago on a podcast about what we hated about Star Wars going back and adding the midichlorians as an explanation scientifically for the Force. That doesn't match reality. What matches reality is there's some mystical supernatural mess going on.
Yeah.
And that's more real, you know? Yeah. We want stuff
everyone
that's real.
Everyone was happier without the explanation. Just like, you know, with Rob Bell or Peter Enns or all of these people trying, you know, to recast the Old Testament as something that it's not. The Old Testament is going to forever be violent.
That's what it is.
And God's not trying to say, understand this differently than this. And even if you take God out of it, the human authors are saying, yeah, this is what we believe God... Say, pretend the Bible's not inspired or inerrant. The people who wrote it, respect them enough to say, yeah, we're going to go... We were told to go murder all those people, and that's what we're going to go do.
Yeah.
That's what they wrote.
Yeah.
That's what they wrote. And there's no way... Forget whether or not it's true history.
We got to quit because I'm teetering on the edge of defending all that stuff as an apologist. You're like pushing my apologist button. And so I'm not going to, because that would be another hour.
But I'm just saying, the
podcast.
Old Testament is what it is. And you actually do a disservice to it by trying to make it more palatable. It's supposed
to be. Quit trying to change reality. That's this show. Quit trying to make it what it's not. Now, you can affect reality and help try to turn it towards something, but don't try to act like what it is right now is this. When it's this.
Right.
And that's actually hurtful to minorities and transgendered people and all other kind of people. It's actually dangerous. It's not loving. And
it's in the case of Peter Enns and
the
Rob
biblical
Bell,
stuff.
It's bad exegesis, bad.
And it's going to hurt the message of the Bible if you care about the message of the Bible.
Right,
and even if you don't care about the message of the Bible, guess what? You ought to respect it as literature, as you're kind of saying.
True.
And you're messing with the greatest piece of literature in the history of man. All right. If you've been listening to this as an audio podcast, you can get it as a YouTube video. Just go check out the relevant YouTube channel. It's also wherever you got this. There'll be a link, unless you just got this directly from iTunes, in which case, go to BraxtonHunter.com, and you can find all the information there. You can watch the video. You can, and if you want to, if you're interested in learning casually, go to BraxtonHunter.com. If you're interested in learning formally, go to TrinitySem.edu. But you can learn casually at Trinity Sem as well. And you do that by auditing classes. It's cost you next to nothing. And you can learn on any theological issue and a lot of practical ministry stuff. And you need to do that. I want to see an army, Dr. Pritchett, of lay people who rise up and are theologically knowledgeable, who can, if they get a pastor who turns out to be a Rob Bell type guy, they know what to say.
Amen.
So do that, and we'll catch you next time here on Trinity Radio.